Blog Talk Radio.
Hour ago at 6 o'clock, but due to minor technical difficulties, and more so our unwavering dedication to bringing you the cream in internet radio programming, we have indeed overcome. My name is Arlie Gordon of Unity Design and the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo, and it is my mission to prove that Black America has all the necessary resources to improve the quality of life and learning for our young generation. This and every episode of the Gist of Freedom is Faith is produced by acclaimed educator and author Leslie Gist Etheridge and serves as a weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who are through faith and focus persevering in preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. As always, I want to thank our listeners for joining us tonight and encourage you to call in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552. Again, that number is 347-324-5552. Let us get right into it. If our churches could talk, what would they say to us about the roles they have played in shaping our culture? Our children, our elderly, our families. What would they tell us about the power of our faith in the uplifting of our spirits, our communities, and our people? As all of us know, churches have always been a glorious, important part of our proud heritage. And we are indeed honored tonight to have with us on the show Professor Sherry Dupree, who is founder of the Dupree Pentecostal Foundation, and who is here to share with us invaluable tips on the importance of archiving and preserving church records and church history. Thank you, Professor, for joining us on the Gist of Freedom is Faith.
Thank you for having me this evening.
It is, again, our honor. And I spoke with the professor during the week, and she was kind enough to discuss with me her very important, if not vital, work in preserving history of her church, but all of our churches. And I want to share a quote from her, if I quickly can. "Our history has to come out of the old dusty boxes under the beds and in our closets. Our families have to be willing to tell the truth about their past in oral history. We have to be willing to accept the truth about our past without judging others if we want to clarify the roles of African Americans in American history. And I thought that was so eloquently coined, I wanted to reiterate it for the benefit of our listeners. Let's get right into it again, Professor Dupree. Tell us how and why you began to do this very important research for your church under the Holiness Pentecostal movement.
Yes, I started this research in 1981. I was a librarian at the University of Florida in Gainesville, Florida, and one of the students came in and asked for information on the Church of God in Christ, Charles Harrison Mason, out of Memphis, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And we checked the reference sources and the basic African-American sources for religion, and we found practically zero. We could not find information. So what we did, we contacted the headquarters in Memphis, got the doctrine manual, found a few newspaper articles out of Memphis, Tennessee, gave this to the student, and this was in about a two-week period, and the job mm-hmm. was done. But it wasn't done for me because I began to see that we did not have materials that would be supportive of this aspect of African-American religion. So I contacted the Library of Congress, and I also contacted the National Archives. We researched those two areas and found there was practically nothing for the Holiness Pentecostal Sanctified type churches. Quite a bit of information for our Baptist churches and the Methodists. So I was told there's a hole in our history here. We need to get busy on it and try to find materials that would be serviceable.
Mm-hmm.
I decided that since this was the situation, I did a grant at the University of Florida, a research grant, to see if we could begin the research on the Pentecostal movement. And that opened the door for us to find quite a few materials by going to Howard University and to the Divinity School there, going into Atlanta to the different colleges and looking for materials. And mm-hmm. that said to us, yes, there are materials out here. So after receiving that funding from the University of Florida, I decided that we would continue this. And I went to the National Archives again and to the some other historical sources and got fairly large sums to continue grant searching. Then we were able to do magazines, books, pamphlets, and other things, especially in the Chicago area. I spent quite a bit of time there looking. And then we realized we were onto something that would be supportive, that would allow history to go forward, and to bring back hidden history, African-American hidden history within our churches. So that's basically how we got this thing moving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that there was information, there were resources out there, but they were indeed scattered.
Yes.
And you had to go to, you had to do some traveling to different cities, i.e. I believe you went to New York,
yes.
to Schaumburg, and various places to to collect and begin to consolidate this information. Now, how do you go about gathering reference materials and religious materials?
Well, now, there are many ways to do that. But in our case, our best way of gathering was to go to the church headquarters and talk with the leaders and get permission from them to look at the materials that they presently have and make sure we could use that material to share it with the public. In gathering material for us, we have to do oral history because so much of our material is not in print form. It's in oral history form. So a lot of interviews had to be done in helping us to gather materials. I checked sources such as dissertation abstracts to see if any dissertations had been written. All forms of reference type books to see what was done. The city director.
Professor. What was your church's reaction to your endeavor? And how did your congregation support you? Did they appreciate it? And then did they use any of the information that you were able to gather for special presentations and or their own benefit?
Yes. In fact, quite a bit of the materials that we carried back to the churches, people had never heard of and didn't know about. They knew about the main leaders, the head leaders, but they didn't know about the district leaders and the local leaders. And so it gave us an opportunity to share those people that had not been known. They didn't even know who named their church, you know, things like that. That was basic community history. So we were able to go into the Sunday school groups and share history, local history, as well as church history. The youth groups, they were very interested. The senior citizens, one of the sewing groups, we went in and did oral histories with those ladies. They were older ladies and a few gentlemen. And they were very proud to know that somebody was interested in their history and wanted to preserve it. So they got busy with me and decided to say, well, hey, I'm going to take materials that are in my closet and corners and whatever and give them to you. And then we started classifying the materials as to the kinds of things that we were able to save, such as the yearbooks, such as doctrine manuals, Sunday school materials, preaching materials, and so forth. And with those categories, we were able to encourage more people to share. And one thing that I really want to talk about is the obituaries, because we always have obituaries. And those sometimes will give us more history on a person, because many times our people have never been written up in history. They haven't been in the newspapers, so the obituaries will give quite a bit. It gives the names, the addresses. It helps, not the addresses, but it helps us with the genealogy of the church and of the community. So I have found it to be very useful. And also we're working to get more of our materials into African-American studies classrooms, so it will be included, as well as our religious schools. So it's just up with battle.
And how long have you been engaged in this effort? How long have you been doing this work?
Since 1981.
Wow. So we're talking you're going on, you're ready to celebrate your 20th anniversary.
Oh yes. I've been in a couple of years, and once I retire from working at the college, then I'm going to go straight into gathering more materials from people throughout the country and try to get as much as we can in places where people can use it. It's no good in the closet. It's no good.
That's right.
It's not where people can use it. And we've got to get those doors open, such as the Schomburg, which has already opened a door for me, and the Smithsonian has already opened a door, because they realize this is a portion of history that had been overlooked.
Well, what advice do you have for our listeners about the obituaries? Because that seems to be a very profound way of documenting the history of our churches. Should our churches place it in a special preservation so that we can again preserve it and pass it on?
Yes. Now, I am so pleased you asked. Most churches have a secretary or someone who's in charge of their records. And for every person that they bring through that church, all those obituaries need to be saved, and they need to save 2 to 3 copies of the obituary and start a file, just an alphabetized file, and put them in there by the last name of the person that they have listed. After a while, they'll have 300 to 500. We've been working with obituaries for a while, and from one church, I got 680. And what?
Wow.
Once we get those obituaries, we scan them front and back, all the information. Some obituaries are 2 pages. If we get a bishop, it might be 15 pages. But anyway, we scan the whole thing. And then what we plan to do is put them online. And they will be put in line online by alphabetized listing, by the denomination, because we're not just picking Pentecostal. We're picking Baptist, Methodist, anyone that will share. Also, we check funeral homes. Because a lot of our African-American funeral homes do not keep those obituaries. They throw them out. And so if we could get those obituaries, again, that would allow us to have materials that we can share and we can do genealogy, and we can find out who was in the community, who owned the stores in the community, who were the mm-hmm. leaders in the church, who were the leaders to help the community grow. This is mm-hmm. all in our obituaries. And so if
right.
we can gather those from people, we have a door that has not really been opened before for African American history.
We certainly do, and it is a very vital portal to information about our history, because by and large, church has always played such a significant role in the communal collective of our communities and bringing us together under one roof. And I think it is so important to use this this outlet, if you will, to preserve our history, to share our history. Our history is only as good as those that we share it with. And so I'm very proud of the work that you're doing. Now, one of the things I think is very important too is that you offered some suggestions to people who want to keep the history of their church. And I'm sure a lot of our church leaders don't know how to go about that. Have you thought about possibly writing some type of policies and procedures with which to preserve the heritage and history of your church?
Well, we have done workshops already and presentations, and we're still open to do those to help them to come to the church and meet with the leaders and with the general congregation, because everyone mm-hmm. needs to be involved.
That's
in
right.
this. And
That's
I
right.
have written, yes, I have a few articles that have been written on how to find historical materials, mainly church materials. And that is available to the public. So if they contact me, we could get that article out to them. And also we could share some of the places that we've done what we call presentations and workshops. I like the workshops because they're hands-on and we can actually put things in order and help people to see how to keep this going once we're
right.
away.
Sure, certainly, certainly. And where can people get more information before I forget? Because sometimes I get so caught up in the topic of the show that I overlook asking you. Where can people get more information if they're interested in your movement, if they're interested in learning more about how to preserve the history of their church?
Okay. I am going to give you a 1-800 number. It's 1-800-250-4645. And they can call that number, leave a phone number and a time for us to call them back, and we would be pleased to do so. I also have an address if you'd like to have that.
If you have an email address, that would be fine. Share with people your email address if you'd be so kind, Professor.
Yes. The email address is Sherry, Sherry.Dupree, Dupree, at S as in Sam, F as in Frank, college.edu. That's Sherry.Dupree at sfcollege.edu. Okay.
Well, thank you again. Let's share the number one more time. That's 1-800-250-4645.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. And one of the things my producer has asked a question about church burnings. Do you recall the church burnings? I'm assuming that these are the Birmingham, Alabama church burnings.
There are many more. Yes, I do recall those. There are many more. I have quite a few documents from church burnings, mainly in rural areas. Those did not get noted. The Birmingham ones everybody knows about. But they burned quite a few churches in rural areas, the Church of God in Christ, Church of God, Church of Christ Holiness, you name the churches. Many of them had church burnings.
Apparently this is a current issue as well. There have been recent church burnings, according to Leslie, correct?
Yeah, absolutely, and cross burnings also. And in front of church leaders' homes. It's on the upswing.
Okay. And what are your reaction to these unfortunate incidents?
Well, these unfortunate incidents need to be documented and brought out to the public. Also, people don't realize we've had some lynchings here lately, too, and nobody seems to know about them. In the South, in a couple of states, we've had lynchings within the last 3 years. Well, really, one this year. And the public never knows about it. So our churches need to share that information with the community and find a gateway through the black newspapers and so forth to put it out to the public. It seems as if it's getting hidden instead of being shared. And I guess it's fear. I don't know, you know, what's going on other than that. But we do receive sometimes reports from other agencies that will give us more history on our churches. Our newsletters, we could take our newsletters and put this information in there and share it when things are happening in the community so that we know we can pray about it and we can determine how to deal with it in a way that will be acceptable to society.
Certainly.
Our churches are vital.
Yes, and I think it's also important, again, that our churches know to preserve their records so they can put them in a safe, maybe even have a backup or copies of their documentation, put it in a second safe, have some type of backup plan for recording our church records. And it's so important that we, because of these unfortunate church burnings, that we take extra care and caution and contingencies to preserve our church history.
Right. Now, some of our churches have vaults at the banks. I know a few churches, they have invested in that, and they pay
And that makes perfect sense, that because, again, if your church burns down to the ground, like Leslie shared with me that her family church was burned to the ground, and, again, there goes, you know, years, if not decades, if not centuries of history.
That's right. And, of course, we encourage them to get it into the libraries, take it to the libraries and ask them to put it into their vertical files or into community sources where they will be kept and others can use them.
That was actually leading up to my next point. Where do you currently house the materials that you've been able to collect over the past 20 years? I know that you have some material in the Smithsonian Institution, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely. I sent a large collection in 2005. And I'm getting ready to give them another fairly large collection. I gather it, and I don't keep it. I have storage here at where I live, and I also have an outside storage. I keep an outside storage. I do not store in my home because anything can happen to my house. And this storage is so that I can keep it and go there and work on it from time to time. And then after I gather so much, I try to send it to one of my collections, the New York collection, the one in Washington, D.C. They have been able to keep it. Now, we need to mention, too, videotapes, cassette tapes, and all those things are savable, too. Any form of media, any form.
Right. And I was going to get into that because you offered a number of ways that people can preserve their religious history, including church flags, clothing, quilts, books. As you mentioned, videotapes, pamphlets, pictures, photos, obviously, calendars, but also writings. We talked about obituaries already, but biographies, dissertations, and even, you talk about the occupations of churchgoers, of the parishioners.
Yes, that's important. Many times we can't find anything, and if we go into the type of work that the person is doing, we can come up with a record that way that can help us to know who they were, what their hours of work were, and things of that nature. But let me mention one. A balloon was printed in 1940 out in Kansas.
And a balloon?
It would blow up.
Okay, I wanted to make sure I understood what you were saying. Okay,
yes.
A balloon. Go ahead.
Yes, and this balloon, we were trying to determine if the church had a conference in 1940 in this particular city. Well, the balloon had the information that we needed. It had the name of the conference in 1940 in Kansas, and that was the only document that we could find to justify that conference until we were able to do some oral history, and then it was justified that way. But the balloon is what got us on the right track. So anything that you have should be saved.
That's amazing that one balloon could document or lead you to that much more information.
It did. Just that one balloon. 1940 in Kansas. And it had the name of the activity, and it was just in the collection. And she probably had three or four of them and probably thrown them out. Just save that one balloon. And we blew it up enough and used it so we could get the information off of it, and then we used that as our guide to trace us back to that conference.
That is truly amazing how you've been able to connect the dots to create the lines. Now, how has some of the material that you've gathered over the past 20 years been used? We mentioned how important it is for current parishioners or churchgoers to know the history of their particular church and or religion. You mentioned that a student was the one who motivated you to even begin this journey.
That's true.
But will you share with our listeners how this material can be used, repurposed, if you will, and shared in even a larger context?
Yes. Well, let me just mention overseas, because with the material that we have at the Schomburg, we've had several people, ministers, students studying for their dissertations, to come to New York and receive a six-month grant to use the material at the Schomburg. And I'm very proud of that. And they were looking at styles of preaching of African-American ministers. Our style is a little different. They were looking for our styles of music. So they were there listening at the videotape, the cassette tapes, and reading the materials. And they had 6 months in this country. We've had them from Amsterdam. We've had them from Holland and from other countries to come here for that purpose. And I understand that the Smithsonian, they tell me they get people calling and asking for certain things in the collection. The high percentage has been with gospel music. And another high percentage has been with the role of women in the Pentecostal churches. Because in 1903, we had a lady who founded the church, Mother Tate, and was made a bishop by the men in the church. And in the Pentecostal churches, you've had a lot of women leaders. So we've had a lot of activity for that particular area, the role of the youth in the church. But music and preaching have been, I believe, our high priorities. And it's being picked up, and the dissertations are being written. So we're very pleased for that. And then in the community, when you have Black History Month, students are out here looking for materials that they can feel comfortable in sharing. Plus, the teachers want to have lesson plans and use this material. So we're trying to get to the point now of helping them with lesson plans that will include the Pentecostal churches and other local churches as they celebrate Black History Month.
And it's really a fascinating topic because, again, we typically don't associate the importance of our churches with our history. But it is a common denominator in this country and among most of our, if not all of our communities, that there is so much history that has originated and grown in our churches. Where would you like to grow with your movement, Professor?
Well, we're growing fast. My next move is with UNESCO, the United Nations, because of mission work. And they need to know about the histories of the churches that are coming in to do missions in certain parts of Africa and Asia and other countries. And so at this point, this is where we are. We're connecting with them. We're going all the way back to slavery, because you could not understand the African-American without understanding his role in slavery and the Black religion that kept him. And so knowing that, that is my next connection. We've already made that connection with UNESCO, and we're moving forward with trying to gather certain types of materials, especially for the mission fields, the type of missions where we've sent people in Liberia, Africa, and so forth. What years did they travel? What did they do? Who were they? Were they health-related people that could give services? All those are kinds of things that we're looking at now with UNESCO and other world organizations. I have about four other world organizations that have come in, and they're asking for materials and going through collections to see how that will help them understand their people and understand their cultures and understand how this role of religion is playing in these cultures in different countries.
Well, you know what, Professor Dupree, one of the things you just mentioned was when you talk about slavery, I know there's a direct correlation between the Black Church and the Underground Railroad. Can you share anything with about that with our listeners, please?
Oh, yes. I have done interviews of gentlemen, people who left the South and went North in the Church of Christ Holiness USA, a whole family. I followed them from out of Mississippi all the way into Canada. And they told when they got to the Ohio River how happy they were, how they had to separate. The men had to go one way and the women another. Then they ended up back in Chicago in about 2 years, and the family got back together. The women were separated from the men. So, yes, the churches were paramount. The Underground Railroad wouldn't have operated without the churches. And I want to say Methodist Church and the Zion Church was the one that was key, you know, because we have all the churches, but Zion, those that had the Zion at the end of the name, that was what Harriet Tubman had. She was with the Zion. It was A-M-E Zion, and we need to
mm-hmm.
that. And then you go back and you look at those early leaders. They were all in Zion. And when we have not given them credit. We give the AME Methodist credit, you know, with Allen, which is true. And we love that. But we need to come back and look at that AME Zion, because they were the key ones in the early Underground Railroad.
Wow. This has really been a fascinating discussion. I want to thank you personally, Professor Dupree, for joining us on tonight's show. I think we may have to bring you back and to continue this conversation another time, because there's several other questions I would have liked to ask you had we more time. But we are out of time, and I appreciate your due diligence and great work in making sure that our history is indeed something that we can share with not only our young generation, but those of us around the world, as you mentioned, who have an interest in our church history. Would you like to share with our audience any closing remarks?
Well, I just want to mention to them that I was in England this summer, and I went to Liverpool to the Slave Museum, and I'm going to be working with them to include some of the early activities of the church, especially the ring dancing and so forth. And we're going to tie that into how we have operated within the Holiness Pentecostal churches. So that would be my final word.
Well, I would like to again thank you for being our very esteemed guest on the Gist of Freedom is Faith. Again, I'm encouraged to know that you are out here documenting and preserving the history of our churches. I would encourage listeners who go to church to make sure that the church leaders know to do the same, to make sure that we keep our history alive. You've been listening to The Gist of Freedom is Faith. Again, our very special guest has been Professor Sherry Dupree of the Dupree Pentecostal Foundation. If you would like to contact Professor Dupree, let me share with you her contact information. You can call 1-800-250-4645, or you can email her at Sherry, Sherry, dot Dupree, Dupree, at ffcollege.edu. That's Sherry.Dupree at S as in Sam, F as in Frank, college.edu. Thank you again, Professor, for joining us on The Gist of Freedom is Faith. We hope that your work is always successful. And again, it is greatly appreciated by us. And blessings to our listening audience. We hope you will join us next Sunday night on another episode of The Gist of Freedom is Faith. Good night. God bless.
God bless.
Thank you. the next time we see each other, maybe years and years from now. Family reunion, got to have a family reunion. Family reunion, it's so nice to come together, get together. I wish Grandma could see the whole family. I sure miss her, babe, and a warm and tender embrace. Whether you want to believe it or not, because you'll bleed.